This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with SG2 experts and industry thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
Hi, SG2 Perspectives listeners. We are trying something fun and maybe a little dangerous. On May 22nd, we're hosting a live podcast where you can join us for the recording of an episode. Our relationship right now is a little one-sided and we want to meet you. So we'll put you in my chair. You can ask us questions, share your insights, or just heckle us. There's more information in the show notes, but you do need to register so you can get a link to attend. Hope to see you there.
We have now a higher fertility rate than most advanced economies, and the fertility rate has been dropping year over year, pretty much without pause since 2008, and we still think that we haven't hit the floor yet. When we hit the floor, perhaps 10 years from now, we're talking about instead of 3.6 million births, perhaps around 3.2 million births, which is an amazing change in the landscape.
Welcome to SG2 Perspectives. I'm your host for today's episode, Jamie Zage. I am joined today by Dr. Jeremy Miller and Dion De La Cruz, who are our leading experts at SG2 on obstetrics. There's been a lot of conversation and news around closures and other things related to OB services. I thought it'd be good for us to bring this pair onto the episode today to talk about what's going on and how health systems can respond to these emerging trends. Let's start setting the stage. Obstetrics has been the loss leader. It struggles to produce positive margins unless you've got those level 3 NICUs to go with it. But many organizations still see it as a critical service line to maintain. Why is it such an important service line for the organization?
Organizations see this as a critical service line to maintain for access to maternity care for women in their communities. We've all seen the news articles and headlines of an OB unit closing or consolidating, and there's just been this wave of closure consolidation activity across the country that have resulted in some real access challenges. Women who are living in rural areas and maternity care deserts are exceptionally impacted by this and often have inadequate access to not only a place to deliver, but also to prenatal and postpartum care that's so essential to maternal care.
The hospitals struggle to obtain margin on inpatient obstetrics, but they still see this as an obligation to the community. The community likewise sees this as one of the purposes of having a hospital located within the community. When you think about the sheer numbers, we're talking about around 4 million deliveries a year. That's a lot of patients who are coming through hospital doors. That's a lot of families that are coming through to visit people in the hospital. And the experience that patients obtain when they're in the inpatient setting for OB does say something about the way in which your facility provides care. It's understandable why hospitals think that OB is an important service. That said, we know that the payer mix is adverse, even under the best of circumstances, that roughly 50% of births in this country are funded by Medicaid. That makes things difficult. We know that the obstetrics population is getting sicker. We know that women are getting older when they have their first child, that the prevalence of comorbidities in pregnancy, so here we're thinking about hypertensive disorders of pregnancy, gestational diabetes, those things are becoming more prevalent. So it is becoming increasingly difficult to care for these populations. What percent of the pregnant women now are counted in our high-risk pregnancy care family? Women are increasingly complicated. And that puts a little bit more pressure on our inpatient obstetrics units. Furthermore, we're seeing demographic trends where there are fewer and fewer births in this country. In 2008, there were roughly 4.2 million deliveries. Now we're down to about 3.6 million. So there has been significant contraction here. We know that deliveries are not evenly distributed across the country. There are pockets in cities. There are more babies born than in rural areas. As a result, we see a large percent of counties which don't have any obstetrical care at all, a maternity care desert. According to the March of Dimes, about a third of all counties in this country have neither a labor and delivery unit nor an obstetrics provider, which is amazing. And that has some implications with regard to maternal health. In general, economies of scale are important for providing high-value care and high-quality care. When you see declining birth volumes, see units which have low volumes, and those low-volume units tend to be more affected by adverse payer mix, it becomes increasingly difficult to keep those units open. And that's even before you start to discount for the fact that women who have Medicaid are disproportionately likely to have complications of pregnancy, which makes it even more difficult to care for them. This is really the perfect storm with regard to obstetrics care.
And that low volume, complicated by some higher challenged patients, that has implications for quality and outcomes that is also a concern as these volumes continue to drop.
That's exactly right, Jamie. people are affected by access. The number of women who don't have adequate access to care numbers in the hundreds of thousands of pregnant women every year. And we know that there is also a demographic disproportionality here. Roughly 20% of African-American women and 17% of Hispanic women don't get adequate prenatal care as compared to white women. That's not just an abstraction. The maternal mortality rate for Black women in this country is about 55 per 100,000 live births. It's three times higher than comparable white women. So it's not just that there's a care problem, we also are paying a price in terms of the outcomes that patients achieve.
It really compounds some of the issues. We're seeing closures based on financial, but also the ability to give high quality care. For those organizations that are evaluating this, they're at risk of closing. What are some of the options that they have? How are they making these decisions?
It will depend on the specific situation and what specific challenges the OB unit is facing. Hospitals have several options. They can maintain the unit, they can close the unit while maintaining other maternal care services, or they can divest. For the first one, they can maintain services and commit to addressing specific challenges that they're encountering. We have a case study in our new publication where a hospital in the Midwest has seen declining birth volume and out-migration of patients, but they believe that the market population decline would rebound as families move closer to the area. They committed to maintaining their services and developed a comprehensive plan to curb out-migration. This also includes reducing high-risk transfers by developing partnerships with a nearby high-risk provider and also expanding recruitment efforts, knowing that workforce coverage is another challenge facing OB units. Another option would be to close the unit, but still maintain other maternal care services. While some organizations may need to close, they can still commit to other services as well. There's an organization in Connecticut that consolidated one of their units, but committed to continuing to provide prenatal and postpartum care locally. They provided free transportation for both emergent and non-emergent cases. Those are some strategies they put in place. And then the last option, of course, would be to divest from OB services completely.
We hear a lot about the crisis in terms of obstetrics in rural areas, and that's really where the maternity care desert issue is really coming to a head. Organizations need to bear in mind what their goal is. I understand that part of my goal as a health organization is to care for people, but part of my goal is also to make sure that patients who are in my catchment area obtain ideal care. There was a study by the National Bureau of Economics Research, and they looked at what happened when maternity centers closed. Typically, these centers which are closing in rural areas are low volume and they're under-resourced. And if you look at what happens to the patients in those zip codes, the care tends to improve when those units close, which I know is surprising because you think you're taking away local access. The reality is when a low volume unit closes, those patients then get routed to a unit which is better resourced and which can obtain better outcomes for those patients. Even though it sounds terrible closing a unit, and I'm not suggesting that's what everybody should be doing, but it's not as though that necessarily obtains an inferior outcome for the patients in the zip code that are served by that obstetrics unit. That's important to bear in mind. That does mean if you're thinking about closing your unit, you have to make some kind of arrangement for the patients who are still potentially showing up on your doorstep with an obstetrics problem. And that means you have to have transfer arrangements. You probably need to make some arrangements for care for those patients via telehealth during their pregnancy. And you have to make sure the patients are educated about where they're supposed to get care if they're urgent or semi-emergent. There is still a job that your healthcare facility needs to do, but it may not necessarily be providing that care locally. Can you be a partner to make sure that your patients get care in an appropriate location?
You've got to really rely on some maybe non-traditional partners or frenemies, as we call them, maybe rely on them as a way to make sure that your patients are getting access. One of the things I remember studying and researching early on when I covered women's health many years ago was this concept of the maternal fetal medicine specialist.
Four MFM experts provided maternal fetal medicine care for Arkansas using a telehealth tool. That was novel 15 years ago. Now, telehealth for MFM is simply the norm. Part of this is because the model has matured, and obviously COVID has changed the way people see the telehealth option. That model is quite mature, and it's not just about consultation. A properly trained sonographer can also provide a level 2 ultrasound, so a more advanced imaging study, with the maternal fetal medicine person at some distant location reviewing the images and saying, hey, I need to see this or I need to see that, and they can also perform a consult at the same time. What really needs to happen now is for those organizations which are considering changing the model by which they provide care, they have to make sure that the transfer arrangements happen so that patients can actually deliver in the appropriate location. That's much more complicated than this notion of, can I provide consultation for complicated patients at a remote location? That's solved.
As organizations have closed or are considering closing, what are some of the downstream or secondary effects of those closures that health systems need to be aware of?
The first one is, we know women tend to be the primary healthcare decision maker for their families. Closures can have a ripple effect on some of those downstream pediatric services for their kids, as well as services for their aging parents.
That's right. Bear in mind, too, that when you lose OBGYN providers, that rural communities have a harder time attracting obstetrics providers. It's just the way it is. Those providers are aging, and it is difficult to replace them. Those obstetrics providers are also referral sources for a variety of different kinds of services, including GI services and cardiovascular services, and primary care to a certain extent, too. If your referral network for some of the specialty care is contingent upon OBGYNs who are, to a certain extent, a primary care provider for women, that can disrupt your referral arrangements. You get not just this issue about women are primary decision makers with regard to healthcare and their family, but you're also losing some of those referral relationships, too. And that can be very disruptive. It's also difficult to understate the extent to which communities identify hospitals as sources of obstetrics care. Even if the decision to shutter an obstetrics unit makes all the sense in the world from an outcome perspective, people still have these warm, fuzzy feelings about those units, and they get very upset with healthcare institutions' decision to close. Some of this is, we're going to close our unit, and then there's this public relations blowback, which is difficult for institutions to navigate. And that's also very difficult to put a price on, but you don't want to be the CEO of a hospital that's in the news defending that kind of decision. You want to make that decision about what kinds of obstetric services you want to provide with your community members and not surprise them by, hey, we've decided to close our unit.
Yeah, it's all about the optics and how you communicate and be in advance and show them what you're giving them instead. It's not an elimination, but an enhancement and a replacement in some way, shape, or form.
Yes. And that's also about trust. If you've trusted me to negotiate the decisions about we're going to provide these services or those services, and we've got a trusting relationship, then I can have a conversation with my community about why it's important in order to provide you with better care for me to close this unit or for me to change the kinds of services which I'm offering. If you don't have that trust, I promise you that decision, we're going to do X, Y, and Z to our obstetrics unit, is going to look like all I'm doing is looking at the dollars and I'm not looking at the patients, because people won't believe you. That's why it's important to have good relationships and why making this decision with the community can be really important.
As we look to the future, knowing that birth rates are not expected to increase, tell me if I'm wrong on that one.
Oh, no, you are absolutely right, Jamie. We have now a higher fertility rate than most advanced economies, and the fertility rate has been dropping year over year, pretty much without pause since 2008, and we still think that we haven't hit the floor yet. When we hit the floor, perhaps 10 years from now, we're talking about, instead of 3.6 million births, perhaps around 3.2 million births, which is an amazing change in the landscape.
That's almost a million drop from where we were a few years ago. As we look to that future, what's going to be important for maintaining high quality, high touch obstetrics care?
Part of this is about the capacity to deliver seamless care to complicated patients. Part of this is about making sure that you've got a well-functioning staff of MFMs and well-functioning referral relationships. And there's also probably an increasing role for midwives, advanced practitioners, as well as for some different models of care. We've already been experimenting with the kinds of care which involves group prenatal visits. There's probably more of a role for that as well. You can deliver both high touch and high tech care, and we'll probably see more of that. It's not going to be easy.
We hear workforce is a challenge across the board for almost every service line. What's the workforce situation in obstetrics?
The shortage of OB-GYNs is only growing, and the current distribution of OB-GYNs that we're seeing now is it's denser in urban areas than it is in rural areas. And in rural areas, we know they already increasingly struggle to recruit and retain providers. That's one trend that's happening with workforce. Jeremy, what would you add?
that increasingly difficult to recruit providers to rural areas. Even a hospital that is thinking about, we have the volume here to maintain our services, they may not have an obstetrics provider and they may not have sufficient obstetric nurses in order to offer that care, even if that's exactly what they want to do. It's just hard. There aren't any simple solutions to this.
Jeremy, your career is in obstetrics. Why is OB such a challenging field?
Let's start with the fact that compensation for hospitals for obstetrics is adverse because a large percent of the population is Medicaid pay. That's even more true in rural areas. And those rural areas where Medicaid is more prevalent, you also see more comorbid disease, hypertension, obesity, and what have you. Part of the problem is that in order to be good at anything, honestly, volume is a consideration. When you don't have sufficient volume, you can't build those economies of scale. And those economies of scale, it's not simply a question of, gee, the more of this that I do, I just am naturally better at it. In order to deliver high quality care, that requires skilled personnel. You have to have people who see things and take care of things that are complicated, so their care reflexes are well honed. That even somebody who has been adequately trained, if they don't see the kinds of complicated cases that happen, you're going to encounter adverse outcomes. That's just the way it is. That's one challenge that these low volume units are going to face, is how do you maintain adequately trained staff? And the answer may be that in order to provide adequate care, that you have to make sure the patients receive care in a unit that just has more volume. And that may mean setting up transfer arrangements, closing your unit and what have you. The reality is the kinds of OB, that some of this stuff is by the book, textbook, and it's fairly straightforward. But also, and I can tell you as a practicing OB, I see the kinds of situations which require a response in the next 15 minutes. I see the kinds of situations which require a response in the next 5 minutes. I encounter situations where you need me to do something in the next 30 seconds. And that level of acuity, if you don't see those kinds of scenarios on a regular basis, you lose your skill set. And that's what makes it particularly difficult and perhaps even somewhat unsafe for low volume units to go on functioning. Institutions do need to make a difficult choice. Is it worthwhile maintaining that unit in this low volume setting? Or are patients going to be better served by having those patients? Yes, they may need to travel 30 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour in order to get to an inpatient facility. But if they're going to a higher quality inpatient facility, they may be better served.
This has been really fascinating. As we've talked through some of the challenges here, it resonates a lot with what we've been talking about with our members in terms of being very intentional about what you offer and what you don't. And that not only do you need to look at it from a financial perspective, but you need to look at it from a community service and a quality perspective. I really appreciate Dion and Jeremy talking through some of the issues that relate to how we deliver high quality obstetric care. I think our members appreciate that perspective as well. And thank you all to our listeners on SG2 Perspectives. I'll see you on the next one.
Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review us, and or follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn at SG2 Healthcare. And if you want to talk more about innovative healthcare strategies, you can always email me at sg2perspectives@sg2.com. Finally, SG2 is a Vizient company, and there are a bunch of Vizient podcasts that you might like. You can find them at Vizient / podcasts. Have a great day.